Last week, or no, on Monday, didn't we start discussing benzene? And we did a molecular orbital approach actually to two molecules, benzene and a close cousin, cyclobutadiene. And we found two contrasting effects. Two contrasting effects of cyclization. Because six carbon compound with three double bonds, if it were linear, that exists. Four carbon compound with two double bonds, if it were linear, that exists. But what we found out is that there's some unusual stability that occurs by bringing the six-membered system into a ring. That the bonds between different carbons are all the same length. So there's something unusual about the structure of benzene. But the opposite happens with cyclobutadiene. It is unusually unstable. The two pi bonds try to get as far away from each other as possible. But yet if we look at the two molecules, they're both cyclic systems. They both have sp2 hybridized carbons at every point in the system, but we have these contrasting effects, one of stability, one of instability. And I believe in this section at the end of the first lecture on benzene, we got these terms, aromatic and anti-aromatic, didn't we? So remember that cyclobutadiene is anti-aromatic. That cyclization causes instability. Whereas for benzene, it is aromatic, which again does not directly relate to the fact that many of these derivatives do have a fragrance. Aromatic, the word may have come from the fact that these compounds are fragrant, but the term itself refers to this stabilization, the fact that cyclization causes notable stability. Now, to make the arguments that I did as to why one is stable and one is unstable, we had to write these molecular orbital diagrams. And we did not smog diagrams. Well, we did do one, but that wasn't the main point. We did these diagrams where we used p orbitals that were shaded different ways to represent the bonding, non-bonding, or anti-bonding orbitals that would form. From benzene, and we're going to have this discussion again the next lecture, for benzene, what ends up happening is by cyclizing, the total energy released by putting bonding electrons in the bonding orbitals there's a greater amount of energy released for benzene than there is in a linear molecule. And that is that extra stabilization that occurs. You might remember that for cyclobutadiene, because of the cyclization, we went from a system that had, if we were in a linear system, only bonding orbitals. But by making it a ring, we forced two electrons in an anti-bonding orbital, which is what caused it to be destabilized and why the molecule tries to pull apart, so that it's not fully cyclically conjugated. Now, in theory, with the same approach we could use for any size molecule with any number of atoms. But you can imagine that if we have a nine-sided figure, that it might get kind of scary to try to rationalize what would the molecular orbitals look like. But we don't need to know what they look like in order to predict their energies because of this crazy coincidence known as a Frost circle. As if you look at the diagrams for benzene, the energy diagrams, that is, for both benzene and cyclobutadiene, there is only one lowest energy level, which if you think about it, think of the particle box example, think of the phone cord example, think of the fact that these conjugated systems we had imagined as a line of carbons. And there's this lowest energy wave that would cross it. There's only one way to have that lowest energy wave. So no matter what size the circle is, there will only be exactly one lowest energy level. Due to this symmetry that occurs that I can't really even get into in this class, so you're just going to have to believe me on this one. But in the cyclic systems, for every other energy level, except possibly the top one, all those other orbitals occur in even numbers of electrons. And what we could find if we did every possible cyclic combination is that beyond that first lowest energy bonding orbital, you always have, for bonding orbitals at least, pairs that would appear. So here's the way the Frost circle works, and let's take a particular example molecule that I have in mind. Another classic case of discussing aromaticity or anti-aromaticity. This is the molecule COT, which stands for cyclo-octa-1-3-5-7-tetraene. And let me explain the rules for creating a Frost circle. Obviously, you start with a circle. Put the origin at the middle, and that line that passes through the origin that cuts the circle in half, that is zero energy level. So the first thing you do is inscribe a polygon with the number of sides equal to the number of atoms in the ring. Now, I know this is unconnected, a bit disjointed, but realize that if we have a molecule like this, ethyl benzene, that ethyl group is not in conjugation with the benzene ring. It's just sp3 hybridized. There might be hyperconjugation, but there's no conjugation, which means it doesn't. The ethyl group really doesn't stabilize or destabilize the ring terribly much. It actually does have a small beneficial effect that we'll discuss in a couple of lectures from now. But in other words, if we're worried about whether this is an aromatic compound or not, we don't look at the ethyl group. We only look at the ring portion of it. So when doing this Frost circle, which you'll see what the point of the Frost circle is momentarily. When you're doing one of those, that polygon you're going to inscribe has the same number of sides as the number of atoms in the ring. The one restriction to this is that one vertex of the polygon when you'd expect to hear that kind of phrase in OCHEM, the vertex of the polygon must be located at the very bottom of the circle. Then vertices on the midline represent non-bonding orbitals, non-bonding molecular orbitals. Above the line, we have antibonding, and below the line, bonding. Where this comes from is that any interaction between a pi system, a conjugated pi system, could be modeled using a series of matrices where the different elements in that matrix represent the different interactions that occur between atoms. In a cyclic system, we restrict that so the interaction only occurs between one atom and its immediate two neighbors. It turns out in solving the system of equations that comes out of that matrix, the solutions always have this form where the lowest energy orbital, there's only one of it, and that, again, for the bonding orbitals, they would otherwise occur in pairs. And let's see how that would work in this cyclooctatetraene system, because we have eight carbons in the ring, and because there's eight atoms in the ring, we're going to inscribe an octagon into the circle. I know I've already said it, but I got to say it one more time because it's a common mistake. The fact that the molecule has an octagon shape is a coincidence. It's because there's only eight carbons in the ring that we're going to inscribe a octagon. Again, if we look at the case of this ethyl benzene, you would not put eight points in that polygon because we only have six carbons in the ring. So cyclooctatetraene, let's inscribe that octagon. And what do we get? Well, allow me to give myself some more room here. We end up with a set of molecular orbitals that have these energies, which for our purpose, we don't even need to know quantitatively exactly what those energies are. We just know that we have a certain number of antibonding, non-bonding, and bonding orbitals. Now, let me scoot this down one moment. In the cyclooctatetraene, how many pi electrons are there? Eight. Because each pi bond, whether it's real or not, whether it's just something on paper or not, does represent two electrons. So four pi bonds, eight electrons. Let's fill these up. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Notice that two of the electrons go into non-bonding orbitals. How would that compare to the linear case? Well, in the linear case, you're going to end up with four bonding and four antibonding orbitals. For an even number of linearly arranged p orbitals, you have an even number, half the molecular orbitals that result are always bonding, half are antibonding. There's still eight pi electrons, but now they only go into bonding orbitals. So here in the case of the linear, we have eight bonding electrons. Here, only six bonding electrons. The true shape of cyclooctatetraene is like this. Where two of the double bonds kind of pucker up like a boat shape to avoid the other two double bonds. Because when the double bonds avoid each other, all of the electrons end up in bonding orbitals. If you were to force the pi bonds to be flat, then you're going to force two of the electrons into non-bonding orbitals, which would be higher in energy and it's not favorable. So even though there might be a cost to distort the molecule, it ends up being beneficial to do that to avoid this anti-aromaticity. So let me write this down, and we're going to do another frost circle example right away. See how to use these frost circles. In cyclooctatetraene, when the molecule is forced to be planar, two pi electrons are forced into non-bonding molecular orbitals. If cyclooctatetraene distorts, the four pi bonds are no longer fully conjugated, so the pi electrons
but exist only in bonding orbitals instead.
So part of the reason this is a classic example is if we looked at the structure and that's all we knew about it, it's just the way it's written on paper, we might guess that it should be planar. Because sp2 hybridization, that is planar geometry. And if every carbon is sp2 hybridized, why wouldn't it all be planar? We could try to calculate, which I forget how to do this in, if you have an eight-sided figure, what's the degree between any two of the, who are my geometry geeks
like
here?
2n minus 180.
Divided by 8.
60n minus
180. I'm just going to guess it's,
about it for a triangle.
I think it's close enough to 120 that probably bonding alone isn't going to be the problem. Problem is, though, it won't be planar because if it was, then you'd have this destabilization because of the change in molecular orbitals that would result. So question about this example before I go to one more classic example. All right. So next example, where I'm going to again use the Frost circle, which the two things about a Frost circle that I care about right now are, one, that we don't have to know how to write the pictures of the molecular orbitals to argue whether they're bonding or antibonding, and again, it does give us the relative number of bonding, antibonding, or non-bonding orbitals. So here's another very classic case. Cyclopentadiene, cyclopenta-1,3-diene. Notice that I say it has a pKa value of 17. And the hydrogen I've drawn in is the hydrogen that that pKa value is referring to. In fact, I'll circle it to highlight the fact that that's the acidic proton. Which it is acidic for a compound that's just a pure hydrocarbon. If you think about it, alkanes, which if we didn't know better, that would look like an alkane proton. They have pKa values usually in the 50s and 60s. Alkenes around the 30s. Alkynes in the mid-20s. An alcohol with a nice electronegative element on it is going to have a pKa around 16. But only because it has that electronegative element. So how is it that we have a pure hydrocarbon that is, by comparison, really acidic? Yes? Well, of course it gets deprotonated, but why is it able to get deprotonated? Because pKa 16 compared to 50 means there's a whole lot of stabilization going on due to something. Yes?
Resonance.
Okay, so let's look at that resonance. So an H plus comes off, which is going to leave an anion. Leaving out the bond numbers, for short, this is called the cyclopentadienyl anion. And you'll see in a moment why I don't bother quoting the bond numbers in this. So what is the hybridization of this carbon that I've circled with the anion on it? Okay, sp3. Are you sure? Because sp2? Because if Emerson says that there's resonance going on here, let's write a resonance structure. We've only got one more guess, right? Sp? SPF-15. We can write around another resonance structure. In fact, there's a total of 5 of them for this molecule. So, if you look at any one point where the anion temporarily gets localized, well, you could say each one is sp2 hybridized. But in any other structure, you would look at it and want to say sp3, but you look at any other structure, that same carbon's sp2 hybridized. Well, this is because these are resonance structures. So on paper, yes, it looks like the anion stops in one place, but the point of resonance structures is none of these are right. So although in the
cyclopentadienyl anion is written with a localized lone pair, which makes that carbon appear to be sp3 hybridized, the written structure fails to correctly reflect the shape of cyclopentadienyl anion due to delocalization.
Now, why would it do this at all, though? Because, yes, it's resonance stabilized. But there isn't just resonance going on here because it's cyclic. Let's draw a Faust circle for this. Which, again, it just happens to work out that we're going to inscribe a pentagon in here because there are 5 atoms in the ring. Again, if we had extra atoms, things that were not in the ring, they wouldn't be inscribed as part of this polygon. So we inscribe the polygon. And what do we get out of it? Well,
in terms of orbital energies, we end up with 5 molecular orbitals, 3 of which are bonding, 2 of which are antibonding.
How many pi electrons are there? 6.
I like that. 2, 3, 6.
No, of course, 6. Why? 2 pi bonds and then the delocalized lone pair. Since the lone pair is delocalized, it's part of the pi system, so we count those electrons. So 6 electrons total, which notice, they happen to exactly fit
in just the bonding orbitals. So there's only bonding electrons, which means
stabilized.
Let me just show you that if we take what looks like a pretty extreme case of a molecule, the cyclopropenyl cation. This is going to have the same type of stabilization. Again, if we draw a Frost circle, it's as minimal one as you can get. And it shows us that we'll end up with 1 bonding orbital and 2 antibonding orbitals.
But again, only the bonding orbitals will have electrons. So in this 3-carbon system, there's 1 bonding orbital. In the 4-carbon system, if you look at Monday's notes, there was still only 1 bonding orbital, and then there were the non-bondings. In the 5-membered system, we have 3 bonding orbitals, the lowest one, and then pairs. If you look at benzene, you have the lowest one and pairs. If you look at the cyclooctatetraene, we have the lowest one and pairs. So there are some generalizations that can be made about aromatic systems, and these are the Hückel rules. First one of which
And this is the Hücke rules for aromaticity. When is a system going to be aromatic? Well, it only happens if the molecule is cyclic, if the portion that you're trying to identify as aromatic is cyclic, because the whatever strange thing that happens that makes it stable or unstable only occurs when you make the cyclic molecule. Along with that, you have to have a full conjugation around the ring. Every point has to be conjugated, otherwise you don't have delocalization. Along with that, though, it has to be planar, because if the orbitals used to represent these are not all aligned with each other, then there's not the conjugation. And then here's this last rule, which normally students just memorize this. But the Frost circles actually give some justification to this, that the number of pi electrons must equal 4n plus 2, where n is any number it needs to be in order to make that expression true, the only restriction being that n has to be greater than or equal to 0. So in other words, if you have 2 electrons, 6, 10, 14, 18, those are all valid numbers. And the reason that last part of the rule works is if you have something like cyclopropenyl carbocation, you're only going to have one bonding orbital. There's your 2, n equals 0. The cyclobenadienyl, we have 6, n equals 1. If we look at cyclodecapentaene, then you're going to have 10 bonding electrons, 2 more orbitals. So in general, 4n plus 2. Yes? N is any number it needs to be so that you can make that equation true with only using whole numbers. Now, with that definition in mind, let's look at a few common example molecules and try to figure out whether they are aromatic or not. What's the name of that molecule? Naphthalene. That's right, naphthalene, which you saw last quarter in your extraction lab. It has a resonance structure. The reason I show the resonance structure is it more clearly shows the fact that ignoring the single bond that connects the two sides together, we look just at the pi system, it looks like we have this track going around all the way around the outside of the molecule. So if we were to make a Frost circle, we would make a decagon, even though this is not the shape of a decagon. We don't even need to do that because that's what the Hücke rules allow us to do. Instead of having to draw those diagrams out, we can just plug and chug. Do we think this is going to satisfy all the conditions of the Hücke rules, though? Well, is it cyclic? Of course it is. Is it fully conjugated? Sure appears to be. Every point around the circle is sp2 hybridized. Is it planar? Yeah, it is planar. There's no other option, especially because you've got that connection between the two sides of the molecule. Does it have the right number of pi electrons? Yes, because 5 pi bonds written, which is 10 electrons, and so if n equals 2, 4n plus 2 gives us 10. So it is aromatic. And that's because it is cyclic, it's fully conjugated, each carbon is sp2 hybridized, It is planar and has 10 pi electrons, which fits 4n equals 4n plus 2 if n equals 2.
Shall we see another one? Or questions about this one first?
How about its close cousin?
If you've got good predictive skills, you may think, okay, he's setting us up here. Because it looks too much like the first example, doesn't it? Is it cyclic? Is it conjugated? Is it planar? No, it is not planar.
How could it be? Because you have a hydrogen pointing down this direction
that's bumping into the hydrogen pointing up from the other direction. Because of the size of the rings, they would pretty much have to be right on top of each other, if not, in fact, overlapping each other, which is not physically possible. So the structure has to distort to accommodate those two hydrogens, which means it's not planar, which means it's not fully conjugated, which means it's not aromatic, even though it looks like it should be.
So due to steric hindrance, the molecule distorts, causing it not to be planar, causing it not to be aromatic.
Questions about that example? Yes?
How do we know the hydrogen?
Right. If the ring is locked into this configuration, then each carbon really is sp2 hybridized because we got hexagons going on. And so the carbon hydrogen bond coming up from the bottom, for example, really would put the hydrogen right about here. And then the same would be true in the opposite direction. Can't physically happen. So it bends.
Other questions?
See another couple of example molecules. What's the name of this one?
Pyridine.
Is it cyclic? Is it planar? Sure it is.
You got all pi bonds here, and it's only one ring, so it is planar.
Is it fully conjugated?
Is each position got a p orbital? Or another way of asking it, would each position be sp2 hybridized?
Yes.
Does it have the right number of electrons? Why? Does it? Does it?
Yes.
I hear people saying, yes, it has 8. And I hear people saying, yes, it has 6. You're both right, but what kind are those 6 or 8? Maybe if we drew a smog diagram, we could figure that out. And I'm only going to draw it for part of the molecule.
And just to make sure we can tell the difference between these, I'll write in the atom labels, which I normally don't do. So yes, each position is sp2 hybridized, which means there are p orbitals at each position. And yes, they all overlap each other. And off each side here, I'll say r, which is going to mean the rest of the ring in this case. But if you have a pi bond between carbon and nitrogen already, can that lone pair be in the same orbital? No. The lone pair is in an sp2 hybridized orbital. And is perpendicular to the pi system. The lone pair does not delocalize. So it is aromatic. So it's not exactly a trick question. You just have to recognize what the structure is, that that lone pair can't be in the same place as the pi bond, so it can't be part of the pi system. Questions on that one? Then how about the other close cousin of this molecule? Pyrrole. Is it cyclic? Yes, of course it is. Is it planar? Yes, because even if we think the nitrogen is got a trigonopyramidal geometry, then the two bonds that are part of the ring are still going to be coplanar with the ring. So yes, it is definitely planar. So it is cyclic. It is planar. Is it conjugated? What is the hybridization of that nitrogen? SP3? No, it's not. It's SP2. And I know what you're saying. It's like, no, you count lone pairs and sigma bonds, and that tells you the hybridization. Yeah, most of the time. I know. I've been telling that lie since Chem 1A or Chem 50. I know. Because I know when to tell the truth. Well, actually, I told the truth all along. Geometry determines hybridization. This is planar, and so it's sp2 hybridized. Because when it's planar, if it's sp2 hybridized, it's got a p orbital that delocalizes with the other p orbitals. That lone pair would be in the p orbital, because as I'm going to show in the smog diagram in a moment, the hydrogen is now pointed out of the ring. So if that lone pair joins the other orbitals, you have 6 pi electrons. That's exactly the number you need to fill the bonding orbitals of the equivalent to the cyclopentadienyl system set of molecular orbitals that we would generate. In other words, it's aromatic. Another part of that story is that nitrogen auto-inverts. If you look at the structure of nitrogen, it's got a trigonal pyramidal geometry to it. So 3 bonds making the base of a pyramid, 1 lone pair pointed the opposite way. Well, that structure inverts zillions of times a second. And in fact, that used to be the foundation of certain types of atomic clocks, ammonium-based atomic clocks. Well, if that thing's always inverting, that means at some point it's transitioning between the two, which means it really does act for a moment like it's sp2 hybridized, which the moment it is, you've got a p orbital, which is conjugated, and it never leaves it. So, this is aromatic. The nitrogen, and sorry, this is pyrrole. The nitrogen in pyrrole is sp2 hybridized. due to the fact that energy is released by the lone pair on nitrogen, delocalizing with the neighboring pi bonds. And so if I did a smog diagram just for this portion of the molecule, see on the nitrogen and the two carbons neighboring it, on all of those atoms, in fact, every atom, every part of the ring, is going to have one hydrogen coming off at a 90 degree angle. So since the hydrogen is perpendicular to the pi system, that makes the lone pair part of the pi system. And so it becomes aromatic. Yes?
Which one is more stable?
Not a reasonable question. Pyrrole and pyridine? You can't compare them, different numbers of atoms. What you could ask is, what is the resonance or the aromatic stabilization present in each compound? That might be answerable. But you can't answer directly which compound is more stable. Yeah?
So this is more acidic.
Okay, let me pull this back down. Where would you have acidic protons on pyridine? No. That's a serious question. What would the pKa value you guess would be for pyridine? Give me a number.
60.
Not quite that high. Because there is an effect on aromaticity, on acidity. But if we just looked and saw those were double bonds, we would guess that the pKa is somewhere around the mid-30s, for example. Nitrogen, yes, this has a hydrogen on that nitrogen. But nitrogen compounds are bases. But what we're going to find out next quarter is that there is a large difference in the basicity of these two compounds. Because for the top one, pyridine, if you react that with an acid and you have protonation, well, it doesn't affect the aromaticity of the system because the pi part of that never has to interact. It's just the lone pair. But down here, if you force that lone pair to react with an acid, you break aromaticity, which is unfavorable. So the top compound's a base, but this bottom one really isn't. But that is mentioned, I believe, in your text, but it's not officially a topic till next quarter because we don't talk about amines, nitrogen compounds, properly until 12C. We have time for one more example. One of my favorite examples. Hint. Problem number whatever on exam 3. Right. Well, actually, I'm writing the exam for you right now in front of you. Because probably each one of those molecules I showed you already, cyclooctatetraene, cyclobutadiene, cyclopentadienyl ion, pyridine and pyrrole, they'll show up in problems somehow. Along with this one. Okay, count the number of sides. No.
Seven.
Which is part of the reason this is fun, because I make people go crazy trying to draw these structures. Oh, that's six. No, that's eight. No, that's six. Why can't it be a simple shape? Is this compound aromatic? Is it cyclic? Is it planar?
Yes.
Is it conjugated?
Yes.
No.
Because there's actually two hydrogens here, not a lone pair. So this...
Did I miss something? Are you making fun of Kevin over there? No, it's not. Oh.
This is a special molecule because it loses
hydride, H minus. It's not acidic. It's, I don't know even what you would call it.
But it loses a hydride instead. And it forms what you could call the cycloheptatrienyl cation. Cycloheptatrienyl cation. But it's also known as the tropium ion. That's its common name.
It's a common enough example that it's got to call it a common name to it. Why might the tropium ion be favorable and therefore losing hydride from that parent compound be favorable? Seems to me a reasonable homework problem. Seems like a reasonable place for you to attempt making a frost circle, because that will give you the answer to the problem.
What is the question?
What is what?
What is the question?
The quiz?
Question.
Question. The question is, why has this happened? Why has hydride come off that molecule? We'll find out the answer on Friday.